Paul actually speaks of our body being a steward. So what do I expect my feet to do? They have a job, right? If they don't work, do we stop everything, right? To go get it worked on. So heart, lungs, the body. And then the first two there in that little box, as each one has received a gift, minister it to one another. And then he talks about those who can preach, those who can lead, those who can show mercy, those who can. And he just starts in on the various things that each one of us is good at. So if we are to try to figure out what the Lord has given to us, then what we do is we look at all the responsibilities and obligations that he's given to the Christian, and then we pick out the ones that we are the best at. Now, that doesn't preclude us from doing other things, but if we all do our part, then this congregation is going to be strengthened and it's going to have everything that it needs. So the parable of the minas, or pounds, depending on whether you're using the older translations or the newer translations, is that the Lord gave to 10 different servants one specific amount of money, and that is a pound. And then he left. And what was his charge to them? Okay, trade, make gain. Now, literally, as we look at the scriptures, what would this menace be?
Talents and abilities.
Okay, talents, abilities, the word of God. And each one of us has been given the word of God. Do we all use it to the same degree? No, some people grow very, very quickly. Some people grow very slowly. Some of it has to do with ability. Some of it has to do with opportunity. And some of it has to do with effort. And that's the key with all of this. So in verse 15, we covered part of it last time. So we're just going to start in verse 15. When the king comes back, he receives the kingdom, and then he calls the people. Now, I noted in verse 15, how prominent is the Lord's return in the gospel? How often is it talked about? Yeah, it's at hand, but is it talked about a lot in the New Testament? No? You don't think so?
I guess it depends on your definition.
Acts chapter 1, right? He's going to come back as you saw him go. 1 Corinthians 15, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, 2 Peter chapter 3, and then things like, O Lord, come, in the book of Corinthians. So I look at these verses that I have. He's coming with the clouds, and every eye will see him. And then he says, wherefore, comfort one another with these words. So the Lord's return is an imminent issue, and it's really the focus. Because if he comes back today and I'm not ready, what happens for all eternity? So we need to be circumspect. Matter of fact, that's what he says. I'm coming like a thief. I'm going to come in an hour that you don't expect. And therefore, you need to be ready when the door gets knocked on. What do you need to be ready to do? You need to be there to open it, and you better have some good answers. So then he brings these servants in, and he asks them what they've been doing. So it says in that second clause, he then commanded these servants to whom he had given the money to be called to him, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Now, here's another question. How often is the judgment day and giving an account of what we've done, is that a prominent part of the gospel? Yeah, that is a very prominent part of the gospel, that we will all stand before the judgment bar of Christ to receive the things done in the body. And when Paul reasoned with Felix, he reasoned of self-control and the coming judgment. So that was a part of the preaching of the gospel. All right, so let's look at verse 16 there toward the bottom of the pane. The first person came and said, your mina has earned 10 minas. Now, in the parable of the sower, what does he say? The increase was. And if you're not sure, you can see the verse right underneath. 100-fold? 60-fold? 30-fold? What'd this guy get? 10-fold, right? He got 10-fold. So he didn't get as much as the what Jesus describes in the fruit that was produced in the parable of the sower, but he's still given what response?
Well done.
Well done. Well done. So let's go ahead and turn a page. The fourth paragraph down, Master, your mina has earned. And then the second man, in other words, did I do it or did your mina do it? Now, Paul says the same thing. Look at that verse right underneath there. It says, I labored more abundantly than they all, yet not I, but what? The grace of God that is in me. And so here we see something very important, because when we get to the third guy, he says, you weren't fair giving me this. This was a responsibility that I could not properly handle, so I just hid it in the earth because I didn't want to lose it. And some people feel that way about the Lord. They feel that way, and we'll talk about that when we get down there. But the people who are working the hardest, like the Apostle Paul, it's because of his gratitude. The obligations the Lord puts upon us is nothing compared to having to spend eternity in hell. And not only that, and I've asked this question before, if serving the Lord only kept you out of hell, would that be a pretty good deal? Would it be worth serving the Lord so you didn't have to spend eternity in anguish? But then he adds on top of that what? Not only are we not going to be in hell, but we are going to be in heaven. So anything he asks of us here, is it unfair? Absolutely not. It's an honor. It's a blessing to be able to serve the Lord. And as I say, the more you feel that way, the harder you work. And the harder you work, the more you have to show for it. And we've talked about the various ways that you can show for it. Your own spiritual maturity, how much you read the scriptures, how diligently you are giving diligence to present yourself approved to God, a worker who doesn't need to be ashamed, properly handling the word of truth. When by reason of time you ought to be teachers, you have need again that someone teach you so they weren't making good use of their time. 2 Peter 1, add to your faith, virtue, knowledge, self-control, perseverance, godliness, brotherly kindness and love. If these things are yours and abounding, then they will help you. So we look at that and we either do something with it or we don't. Some people just hide it. They aren't going to do it. They hear it over and over again, but they never get around to doing it. They never get around to learning what they are. They never get around to adding them. And yet God says, if you do these things, you'll never stumble. If you do these things, your entrance into the eternal kingdom will be abundantly supplied to you. All right, so the question that one person asked, and I did a lot of reading this morning. Why does the 1 minute man who gets 10 back, but the one who made 5, what does he get back? Only 5. Now, the guy that I was reading said that means that the more diligent will get a better reward. How do we feel about that? It might be, might not be. But in another parable, well, actually not even a parable, let's look at that next verse there where Paul says, I plant, Apollos waters, but who gives the increase? God. So who gets the honor for the increase? God. And then he goes on to say, neither he who plants is anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase. So that helps us put things in perspective, Paul.
Yeah, you look at these two. One's given 10, one's given 5. And essentially, I mean, these are gifts that they're kind of born with and assigned, and they take the tools that are given them and they double the amount of tools they get with the tools that they've been given.
Right.
And so, God sees the potential in all of us, and we all have our, like you said, our all unique part of the body that we have our special function for, and it's our responsibility and obligation to grow those tools in order to better glorify God.
Right. That's a good point. And it depends on when you live. The apostles lived in the fullness of time. How about Noah? How many people did Noah get on the ark?
Seven others.
Yeah, his own family. Nobody else. Does that mean he didn't work hard enough? No, it means every imagination of the thoughts of men's heart were only evil continually, and preaching to them wasn't going to affect anything. He told Isaiah the same thing. I want you to go preach. How long am I going to preach? Till the cities lie waste. Till everybody's been removed to another location. In other words, he's not going to have much to show. But did he work hard? Yeah, see, he did what he could do. And so that's part of the problem. I like this next parable, which we'll get to in a few weeks. This man goes out early and he hires people for one denarius. Then he goes out in the third hour, which is 9 o'clock, the sixth hour, which is noon, the ninth hour, which is 3 o'clock. And then he goes out at the 11th hour, which is 5 o'clock. And then at 6 o'clock, he brings them all in. What does he give the people who worked an hour?
All the same wage.
Yeah, he gives them all the same wage. You know, how did the guys feel who'd been working all day?
Gypped.
They thought they were gypped. But that's foolish, because those people who serve the Lord from the earliest moments, they don't make near as many blunders and don't bring near as many sorrows upon themselves. So let's drop down now to this last guy in verse 20. And I want to read part of this paragraph under it, because I think it's important. Some see a believer who has become an unbeliever. Others a steward who has had opportunities but was afraid to use them. Still others see this as only an excuse, the abilities and opportunities squandered on himself. Since there's so much ambiguity, the parable is being stretched further than Jesus intended. So clearly he has to be a believer, because what does he do to the unbelievers at the end? Slay them before me. So this is a believer, but it's a believer who, for whatever reason, didn't use his opportunity. Now, the facts that we know are those 4 points that are on the bottom of page 2. He was given the same menace as everyone else. He was a believer who had accepted the right to rule, his Jesus' right to rule, and took the minna. He didn't squander what he had been given. He kept it safely. He didn't use or buy up opportunities that the menace had given him. So is he going to be punished for squandering? He didn't squander, which means he didn't go out and eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die. He was one of these members who faithfully attended week after week after week, but they never did anything with it. They never grew. They never talked to anybody. They never did anything. And that's the kind of people I think that we're dealing with here. I don't think we're dealing with unbelievers. I don't think we're dealing with people who are ungodly. I think these are just people who use their money on themselves. They use their time on themselves. They come to worship, but that's the extent of their obligation. They don't read the scriptures. They don't try to grow. They just don't do anything with the opportunities that the Lord has given to them. So I think that's the people that we're dealing with here. And I think it's really possible, look at the very bottom of the page, he who received seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, but the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful. Would that be the perfect way to illustrate this guy? He's just not doing anything. The cares of this world, the desires for other things, or maybe he's timid, and he's afraid that he make a blunder. He's afraid he's going to make a mistake. So let's go ahead and turn now to the third page. Now we're going to slow down a little bit. Verse 21 is really... I've never met anyone who looks at the Lord like this. I guess you probably wouldn't admit it if you did. But I feared you because you are an austere man. You collect what you didn't deposit, and you reap what you did not sow. Now, is that a compliment?
No.
I mean, would you say that to the Lord? But he puts it in both parables. So this has to be something that he wanted to point out as a possible problem. And here's an interesting issue. Have you ever not done something because you thought, I'm just not the one to do this. I'll probably cause more harm than good. I better leave this alone. But what does Paul say? As we have opportunity, we need to do it. Buy up the opportunities because the days are evil. You may not be the best person, but you may be the only person. And if you're the only person and you don't do it because you're not the best person, does it get done? And so that's an issue. And for some reason, the Lord wants this in our minds. As I said, he doesn't just use it here. He also uses it in the parable of the talents. Now, I wrestled through this, and I kind of came to the conclusion that the only people who would say something like this are the people in Matthew 13. They receive the word with joy, but when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles. In other words, this is not fair. This isn't what I signed on for. This isn't what I expected. We meet a lot of people like this today. We even get them baptized. Then when they find out, they've got to attend services every Sunday and they've got to start working on themselves. What do they say? That's too harsh, right? That's too much. The denominations aren't asking for things. No other church is asking for the things that the Church of Christ is asking for. Well, what does that mean? It means they're lowering the standards. But as I said a moment ago, those of us who realize what Jesus did for us, he never asks us to do more than he did for us. He came to this earth sacrificing so much and dying for us. And so that's the thing that we have to keep in mind. Virgil?
Just another thought. I don't really disagree with what you're saying, Alan, so bear me out. This verse 21. For I fear you because you are an austere man. You collect what you did not deposit and reap what you did not sow. In a sense, there's an element of truth to that. And what it can be is a lesson to us not to be concerned over what we're given and what the reward is. It's the Lord is the one that gives it, not somebody else.
Right.
And that if we carry it too far in that direction, we come into a very competitive nature. And I'm convinced that in the kingdom, competitiveness is not a good thing.
No, it's not.
And so we got to be careful with that. And yes, I think that there is an element of truth to what is being said here. Yeah. But for me, to be able to be pleasing to the Lord, why should I criticize him about that?
Right.
Yeah, I have no right to criticize him.
Brian?
Yeah, you know, when you think about this from like a finance perspective, the man that loans you money, he's not investing the money, but because he loaned you the money, he is worthy of the interest, if you will, that he's charging you on that loan. And you might remember with the one talent man, Jesus said, instead of burying it in the ground, had you at least deposited it, you could have earned interest back. And so he calls that man a wicked and slothful servant.
Right.
So he did nothing. And same with this guy, right? He put it in a handkerchief. So I kind of view this as he's just making an excuse.
Okay.
He's trying to come up with a valid reason as to why he did nothing. And it's really just an excuse. And certainly the Lord is worthy of any return because of what he's blessed us with.
Well, there's something about this statement that causes Jesus to say, I will judge you out of your own mouth, you wicked servant. And we've talked about this before. There's two words in the Greek for wicked. One means good for nothing. It just doesn't reach up. The other one is actively, viciously, and ungodly in the manner in which they're developing. And that's the one Jesus uses here. In other words, this man has a huge problem. Now, if the problem is not his view of the Lord, then the problem is his view of the Lord led him to do nothing. But most of what I read today is that basically he's saying, even if I do what you ask me to do, there's no return for me. That you are an austere man. Now, look at those two definitions. They're toward the middle of the page, and I don't want to read the whole definition. That's right in the middle of the page. But let me just read what Trench says, because hard is used in the parable of the talents, and austere is used here. And the word hard comes from the Greek word skello, from which we get skeleton. And it means something that is hard and dry and rough and disagreeable to touch. Austere, on the other hand, means something that you put into your mouth and it's bitter and you want to spit it out. So he is saying of the Lord, you are harsh and cruel, and it's difficult to be your servant. And he also says, you are, to serve you is like putting something in your mouth that just is bitter, like something that, like vinegar, or like a fruit that's not ripe, something that just makes your mouth kind of quiver. And so that part alone, I think, is not true. The Lord said, I'm meek and lowly, and you find rest for your souls. And John said, his commandments are not what? They're not grievous. They're for our good. And so there's no way that you could see the Lord as hard and dry and harsh and bitter. But that's the first word he uses. And he says, that's why I didn't do anything, because I know the kind of man you are. You are harsh and cruel and grasping and tough to be a servant under. Go ahead, Paul.
It reminds me of Cain. I mean, this guy, he's openly defiant. He's foolish. He's arrogant because he's, calling his master out, knowing exactly what's going to happen with him because of what he did. I think everything he says here is kind of rhetorical, because he's got to know what the outcome is going to be. Knowing how, this is how he sees his master, well, he's going to get exactly what he has coming to him because he acted accordingly.
Right.
And, it's just, Cain's sacrifice, whatever the reason, was not acceptable, his countenance fell. This guy, it's kind of
right. One of the people that this word is used for in the Septuagint is Nabal. Remember Nabal in the Old Testament? Was he a good guy? No. His name meant fool, and a fool he was. But it says he was this word. Not austere, because this is the only time it's ever used in the New Testament. But this other word, hard, which again comes from the word skeleton, actually comes from a word. You remember arteriosclerosis? You know what that means? Hardening of the arteries. Arterio is the artery. What's scleros? Hardening. Okay, and that's this word. And so I knew you. You are a hard, difficult taskmaster. And is that true in any way of the Lord? I guess it's true of the sinner. I mean, the sinner might look at him that way, but I never met a Christian who looks at him that way. Virgil?
Again, I believe what you're saying is the truth of the matter. But we're looking at it from being taught from the opposite side of this man that's looking and seeing, not that what he's seeing is the facts of the matter, but what he sees is in his master that this person's a pretty tough bird, and that anything that he does or that is not going to count well for him.
Right.
And it comes from the opposite side of the reality here.
Well, as I say, there's a lot of different views on this, so let's just let this one go, and let's see what the Lord does with this. He says, out of your own mouth I will judge you, you wicked, you viciously wicked servant. The statement you have made and the way you handled that pound makes you wicked. And again, that's not a word that the Lord uses very often. He usually uses a different word, which means good for nothing. And of course, if you're good for nothing, that's bad enough. But this is someone who's actively, harmfully mistreating and using people in terrible ways. And it's an interesting definition. I've got it in some of my other notes. I didn't put it here. But one of the interesting things here, when you're dealing with the Lord and you're going to debate the Lord, how do you think you're going to come out?
You're going to lose.
Yeah, and I think that's true of everyone, that their own words are going to hang them. Because God says, those people who are atheists today, God says they're without excuse. And God's going to be able to run them through their life, and he's going to say, you remember this point right here? You should have believed at that point, and you didn't. So he's going to be able to take everyone's words. This man, I guess he thought this was going to get him out of the problem. But the Lord says, look, what you're saying, if it were true, how would you actually be acting? Would you hide the talent if you knew you were serving a man like this? Or would you say, I better do something with it? Otherwise, he's going to be upset with me because I didn't. He is this kind of a person, so I should be working all the harder. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, he's a sinful man. His master is giving him an opportunity to do something, and that's grace. I'm giving you an opportunity here to prove yourself, and I'm not asking a whole lot from you. See what you can do with this.
Right. Compared to what Jesus did, yeah, he's not asking a whole lot.
He's not.
Yeah. And Jesus said, you need to take up your cross daily. Go ahead, Charles.
Yeah, I think that a lot of this also has to do with how we see ourselves. You know, these lessons sometimes helps us to see who we are. Yeah. Are you really going to react to something like that? In other words, you would have to see yourself, okay, am I someone who would not help someone that actually need help, or would I take something and bury it just to prove a point to myself? And I think that a lot of this right here has to do with that, you know, how we are as individuals. Everybody has different personalities, and perhaps maybe this right here may be a lesson for that individual right there. So, okay, well, what kind of personality do you have? You know, it's not going to hurt you to do that.
Right.
So you learn a lot about yourself.
Well, one of the writers that I read today said that this is the person who can't understand God's grace. He sees God as harsh, and he's terrified day by day that he's not going to be able to measure up. And so he does see the Lord like this. He does see the Lord as someone that it's nearly going to be impossible to be pleasing, because he is so great and so perfect that how could imperfect people come before him? And so if that's your attitude, hiding is not the best solution. What's the best solution? Doing the best you can with what you have. That's how, if you're afraid of God, don't stop serving him. Serve to the best of your ability, because what he says is, you should have put my money out at interest. Now, that's not very much. But, you know, in another place he says, if you give a cup of cold water in my name, you will in no wise lose your reward. And I skipped over the information he gives right after the parable of the talents. And we'll talk about this more then. But he says, I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was sick, I was in prison, I didn't have enough clothes. And the righteous say, Lord, when do we do that? What does he say? when you did it to one of the least of my brethren, those are members of the church, if you did it to one of them, if you see someone with a need and you jump into action, you've put your money out at interest. And maybe you're never going to be the person who's going to go out and teach the gospel to the lost. Maybe you're not going to be that person who says, I need to get involved in this withdrawal process, or I need to work toward an elder. There's some people who are not going to be able to do that. But they can't hide. They must use. And out of your own mouth, you're going to be judged. If you say, I was too afraid, Lord, because you're such a powerful creator, God's going to say, well, if you were afraid, what should you have done? You got to do something. You can't just hide it. George, and then Charles, back to Charles. Go ahead, George.
I think we need to be careful about worrying too much about exactly why this particular expression, because you are an austere man, might have been used by somebody. Because it seems to me that when we consider all of the parables, we find some case where someone doesn't do what they should have done, and others do what they should have, and some do more than others. But the point, I believe, of these parables is that you better look at your life, and you better not let anything interfere with doing God's will, more than whether or not we should say, this man did this because... And not be overly concerned about it.
Well, I don't want to miss anything. You know, these parables are important, and I want to make sure if there's anyone in this room who feels like this, who feels that the Lord's just harsh in what He's asking us to do, and I can't do it, I just can't measure up to His standards. Just keep in mind that this is important. That the Lord here is saying, I'm not expecting tremendous results from those of you. When we get to the parable of the talents, He's going to say, I'm going to give you to each according to his ability. So the Lord's fairness is going to come out there. But I don't want to just, oh, that's part of the scenery, let's just move on. I don't want to do that, because there might be a reason, especially when He put it in two different parables, there might be a reason why He said that. Just like there might be a reason when He said, the thorny soil is the heart that has thorns in it, and that person never produces. Go ahead, Charles.
Yeah, I was just going to say, look at the story of Saul, when he was among the stuff in the Old Testament. He also did something that perhaps maybe he shouldn't have done either, because I think that had something to do with him being, the kingdom, taken away from him also too.
Right.
He was hiding, and that's kind of the way that I look at this. Right. I mean, it may not be a whole lot to it, but I'm just looking.
Well, that would certainly be a haughty excuse. So, it could very well be. And George, I did put in here, this may be part of the scenery. It may not be something that's important, but we can't assume that. We at least have to examine it and make sure there's nothing here, because any part of the parable might have more of a meaning than we think. And so that's why I spent so much time on this today. All right, so let's go ahead and turn to the last page. So he says here, you knew I was an austere man, collecting what I didn't deposit, reaping what I didn't sow. If that's true, if that's what you knew, then why didn't you put my money in the bank so that I could collect it as interest? Why did you hide it? Hiding your talent, hiding your mina, hiding your gifts is not the answer if you are afraid or concerned that the Lord is too harsh and that you might make a mistake, and that if you do make a mistake, maybe that would be worse than doing something. And there's times, I think, when all of us struggle with this. We have an opportunity, we're thinking to ourselves, how do I say this? Well, I don't know what to say, and then the opportunity's gone. It just went so quickly. And we just need to realize, even, I had a guy come up to me the other day, and and we were talking, and I didn't know what to say. I mean, we're only going to be talking for a couple of minutes. I thought, well, I just told him while we were on our way to church services, because at least then, if he's interested, what will he do? See, at least he knows I go to church. And isn't that what Peter said? Give an answer to those who what? Who ask you. So we're looking for searchers. We're looking for seekers. So it wasn't much, but at least I don't have to look back on that and say, man, I didn't do anything. I put it out at interest. I mean, I'm not real happy with it. I wish I could have done more, but it just nothing would come to me at that time. We were talking about various things that he liked to do, and it was just one of those situations where you're trying to come up with a way to inject it in, and you just do the best you can. And so, but Jesus here is making it very clear, regardless of how you feel about God, whether you think he's too hard or you think he's very gracious, either way, you can't be that person who hides what they have and doesn't use it, or uses it only on themselves. I mean, we have time, and we have money, and we have brain power, we have gifts, we have opportunities, we meet with people. And if on the judgment day, we never did anything, we never talked to anybody at work, we never helped anybody, we heard all these announcements, but we never got involved, and we never tried to learn the scriptures, and we never worked, that's not the way that you're going to get through this. And so the Lord here, he's got expectations of us as being good stewards. So if all you can do is put my money in the bank. Now let's face it, putting the money in the bank, is that a hard job? Once it's in the bank, you have to do any more? And so the Lord is just wanting to see effort. It may not be great effort. Some people don't have the ability to give great efforts, but they need to do what they can. You remember that widow who put in two mites, and she thought, this is nothing. But what did Jesus say? She gave more than everyone because she put in all that she had. It wasn't much. It was putting her money at interest, lending it to the Lord, laying up treasures in heaven. All right, so the Lord is going to cast this man into the outer darkness. So this attitude, those words, his conduct, all added up to he is not going to enter into the kingdom of heaven. So again, the point of the parable is, I'm a steward, you're a steward. We can't just do nothing. We have to find something. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all of your might. And as I say, it might be considered small, but it's something. And that's what the Lord's looking for. He's looking for people who are willing to give back to him. And that's really James's point. If you don't have any works, how do you prove your faith? If you don't have any works, how do you show that you even have faith? And so in Hebrews chapter 11, not one of those people by faith, and nothing's added after that. It's by faith. Noah built an ark. By faith, Abraham left his country. By faith, Moses chose to suffer ill treatment with the people of God. Now, we may say, well, that wasn't very much to some of them. How would we classify Samson? Did Samson give a lot? And yet, he's in Hebrews 11. Rahab the harlot in Hebrews 11. So, it doesn't have to be a lot, but it has to be something. And it has to be based on what our opportunities are, what our abilities are. But it's the desire. It's the desire and the putting the desire into action that is what the Lord's wanting to see. Now, in verse 24, he takes the mina away from him and gives it to him who has 10 minas. And the people there think that's not fair, but think about it like this. If you've proven that you're going to use it wisely, wouldn't you be the best person to give it to? And so when opportunities abound and God sees in a congregation some people who just, they whatever they get an opportunity, they latch onto it. Where's he going to bring that next opportunity? See, and that's the point in 2 Timothy when he says, in a great house, there are not only vessels of honor, but vessels of dishonor. If you want to be meet for the master's use and prepared for every good work, you have to take advantage of your opportunities. And if we don't do that, then we're just going to end up being a vessel and a dishonor. All right, verse 26, everyone who has will be given. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. So, again, the Lord's, and we have this proverb, use it or
lose it.
And, you know, I went through algebra, geometry, trigonometry, and guess how much I can do with that now? I can figure out how much cement for a circle with pi r squared. I can figure out stuff like that. But anything more than that, I don't know what to do. I'd have to go back to school. So you use it or you lose it. And same thing's true in the spiritual world. A lot of us knew a lot more when we were younger, and we could do more when we were younger because we just kind of let it go. And so the Lord wants to see, like Paul, one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and stretching forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. There's always more to learn, always more to do. And that's what the Lord's looking for, because that's what he needs, is faithfulness. Now, what we actually accomplish clearly is not the issue here, because if you put the money out at interest, you're not going to get a very much back. But that's not the point. The point is not how much you get back. The point is you're putting something in. And that's really the issue here. All right, we'll go ahead and stop there. And next week we're going to do the parable of the sower. The parable of the talents. And we'll be able to move a little more quickly, I think, although there's some subtle differences, so we'll want to explore those a little bit. And again, the reason that I like to go into this in so much detail is because I don't want to leave any stone unturned, and I don't want anyone in the room to miss the opportunity to hear something they need to hear. All right, we'll go ahead and stop. Thank you.